Welcome to Mods. I'll get my book report. A podcast where two weirdo 30-somethings take turns introducing each other to a formative book from childhood the other has never read. I am Ren, and I have really only just realized that I was massively oblivious to advertisement as a kid.
And I'm Brandon, and I have known for a long time that I was oblivious to advertisement as a kid. I grew up on 80s cartoons mainly, like Transformers, which was only there to sell toys.
Well, the book that we read was here to sell dolls.
Yeah. Not one person in this book turns into a car.
There is a car, though.
There is a car, yeah.
So, yes. Disclaimer. On this podcast, we are going to go into detail about the book we are discussing. If you have not read it and do not want to be plot spoiled, turn back now and check out a different episode. Beyond this point, be dragons? Not dragons.
Man, I wish.
Definitely not dragons. Beyond this point, be very rich white people. We have read a slightly confusing book because of the nature of re-releases. So this is a bit odd because what we've read is ultimately three small books in one book, each with their own stories. So we've read Samantha, Manners and Mischief, which is a repackage of the 1986 first three Samantha books. I'll explain. They hooked three books together, repackaged it, gave it a terrible cover, and it contains a great deal of manners and very little in the way of mischief.
The cover did strike me as we needed a cover, and so we just went to a stock photo site and bought one of a girl of about the right age and called it a day.
That's definitely what it looks like. Even though, you know, after digging, I think they did set this whole illustration up to be what the doll version is currently wearing after the repackage. But maybe they just, you know, took a picture of a girl approximately the right age and then just, like, slapped the right clothes on. It's a very disjointed image. She kind of looks like her neck is broken. Samantha Manners and Mischief, which used to be called Meet Samantha, Samantha Learns a Lesson, and Samantha's Surprise, tells the story of a very rich white orphan girl in New York City in 1904. Samantha now lives with her grandmother, who seems by all description to be an uptight Victorian-era lady with uncomfortable views on class relations. There are a few small plots, considering that this was three different books, sort of as follows. Samantha meets a neighbor's servant girl and befriends her, helping her out with schoolwork and learning a lesson on the reality of factory work and the lower class, which she generally kind of promptly forgets. Samantha is upset when Jessie, the household seamstress, quits and goes snooping on her at her house to find out why. I did think it was funny that she thought that Jessie might be a spy or something, instead of what the mundane answer actually was. And a third story is, Samantha is grouchy that her uncle's girlfriend shows up and gets in the way of her normal holiday routine, but then ends up liking her and getting a doll. Dolls are a theme in this. Even though Samantha has some not-like-other-girls tendencies, she still loves dolls. Because everyone loves dolls. Dolls. Did I mention dolls? This didn't have a ton in the way of, like, our usual sort of content warnings, but I did put classism and oblivious entitled white kids in the late Victorian era. Although, actually, this isn't Victorian anymore, is it? 1904 is... What is 1904? Victoria died in 1899?
The Victorian era was up until, like, 1900 to 1901, generally, I think. So we're, like, just at the beginning of...
Okay.
Is it the Edwardian era that comes next? I think it is still valid to say that
we are in the Edwardian era, which is from 1901 to 1914. Ignore me.
I think it's still valid to say that Grand Mary was a Victorian lady, though, because she would have definitely grown up in
that
the Victorian era, and those are the values that she has.
Oh, so yes, this was a me pick I have subjected us to. It wasn't, ultimately, like, it wasn't a painful read. It was very quick.
Yeah.
I have memories. I'm struggling to remember exactly how old I was when I read these for the first time, but I more remember the circumstance. So I kind of need to, like, paint a picture. I moved around a lot in my early, you know, like 4 to 9, I feel like, age range. And I was in a new school in, I think I was already in Augusta at this point, Augusta, Maine, which is a town most people have never heard of, even though it's the capital. I feel like most people are like, Portland must be the capital of Maine, right? It's not. It's
Augusta.
Which only is relevant because I know that I was already just like this dorky outcast. I had these huge glasses, which made me look like an insect. Because this was still in the time where if you needed like a pretty strong prescription, your glasses like super magnified your face. Unless you were like really rich and you had the money to get like the super thin ones. But no, I did not have the super thin ones. I looked like a bug. And I had just like this awful perm because my mom was really like stuck in the 80s. And so I was just this frizzy haired bug girl that people did not like. I was too like weirdly spazzy and hyper. And anyway, this is important because my mom was very invested in me making friends. And so when this girl who was pretty popular, her name was Vanessa, deigned to invite me to her birthday party that year, that my mom was just desperate for me to become a normal kid, she took me to like a kid's toy store to pick out a present for Vanessa. I remember the lady at the store pointing us in the direction of all of these American Girl things and being like, this is what the kids are really into right now. So despite the fact that we like really did not have the money for this, my mom, trying so hard to get me to be accepted by people my own age, bought like this entire book box set of the Samantha books and I think the Molly books, but we'll get into that. I had like an awareness already at that point that like we could not afford this and feeling like so bad about it. I became just sort of like hyper aware of money problems pretty early. Anyway, I go to this birthday party and this girl, Vanessa, like she wasn't mean about it, but, and I don't remember what she said, but I do remember that when the books were opened, it was very clear that she considered herself to have outgrown chapter books of this length because she was, in addition to being popular, she was very smart and was like, I think her dad was a doctor or something because she had this house which had like turrets. It was gorgeous. And she was in the gifted class and she was just, you know, cool. And like she said, she wasn't mean about it, but I knew she did not like this gift and was not going to read it because I think we were too old at that point. Because these books are like, I don't know what, you read these at like in like second grade or something.
Yeah, it struck me that I think these books probably skew the youngest of the stuff that we've read.
Yeah.
Arguably, they are around the same reading level as something like The Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler, but that book feels more deep, certainly.
So, I know that I didn't, like, steal them back or anything, but I know that I kind of, like, retreated and read at least the first one, like, off in a corner while everyone else was doing more interesting things at this birthday party. And then I proceeded to go to the library and, like, take out all of the other ones that were out and just absorbed myself in this, like, glossy, historical nonsensory. The Samantha books are part of the American Girl Enterprise. There were 6 of them, of which we've read the first 3 packaged together. There were 6 Samantha books, there were 6 Molly books, and 6 Kirsten books. Molly was World War II, Kirsten was mid-1800s, and it spawned this whole enterprise. At the point when I got into this, I'm pretty sure it was just the first 3 were out, and then the next wave, which I think were 1991? Yes, 1991. Was when the Colonial Girl series came out. Each girl had her own series of 6 books that were packaged along with, but you didn't have to buy the doll, a doll, which had, you know, clothes and accessories and all of that. The books were really a vehicle to accompany / sell the dolls. But I was too old to care about the dolls. What I cared about was the history. Of which at the time I didn't realize was super glossed over and not necessarily super accurate. Going into this, I was actually like kind of excited to go back into this because I remember it being more deep and more interesting than the first 3 ended up being. But I realized later in looking up the plots of the other 3 Samantha books that we didn't read, that the stuff I remembered being very interesting happens in those ones. All of the different American girls sort of tackle different issues. There's a girl named Molly who's during World War II, and that gets really into a lot of the sort of like wartime stuff and rationing and things like that. And the Samantha book deals a lot with class relations, but through the perspective of Samantha being this really, really rich girl who's BFFs with a very poor servant girl. And my strongest memories of these books were that poor servant girl who used to be like a child worker in a factory and is now like a maid who's 9, ends up later on having to go back to the factories, I believe. Something bad happens to her family. I think the parents die and she has to go back to the factories. And Samantha actually ends up going and like saving her. So this book series is very, like, rich white girl savior trope, but it does get a bit into the horrors of, like, the really, like, poor class in the city at this time. And I remember them, like, not shying away from it. I feel like they mention it in the second book in this one where Nellie is all like, no, this is how factories actually are. Like, people lose their limbs. A girl had all of her hair ripped out, etc. And I had very, very vivid memories of that and being very interested in the class struggles of the kids that had to work in factories. And that was the stuff I remembered the most, which didn't end up being in this.
There is one point where Nellie does describe how awful it is for about a page or two, but that's like as far as it goes. It felt very after-school special, kind of, to me, because
yeah,
the story sort of doesn't do anything in particular for a lot of the time, and then right at the very end of the arc, you're given a quick summation of the lesson that you should learn now,
mm-hmm.
which isn't necessarily supported by anything that's happened prior. It's just kind of a monologue.
Yeah. Samantha herself doesn't have a ton of awareness of other people's feelings, and I found that slightly frustrating. There's this scene where she's showing Nellie, the servant girl, her brand new doll, and Nellie's all, like, sad and silent, and Samantha doesn't, like, ask her how she's feeling or really elaborate on any of that at all. She's just like, la-di-da, I'm rich white girl. And, like, it's noted in the book, and I'm sitting there like, Samantha, ask her why she's upset. And she never does. And I'm just like, what's wrong with you? And I don't know if that was, like, the author making Nellie very sympathetic or what, but there's also just, like, several instances where Nellie is clearly smarter than Samantha. Like, not like book smart necessarily, because Samantha does have to like teach her how to read better and stuff. Samantha will just like posit this problem, like, oh no, like, I wonder about this. And Ellie's just, you don't have to wonder about that. The answer is blah. Duh, everyone knows that.
Yeah, Samantha's world is very sheltered.
At the very beginning, Samantha gave off big, not like other girls energy because she was climbing a tree and like scuffed her knee. And I was like, oh, I'm understanding a little bit now, like why I glommed onto this series. But then that all really went away. And there wasn't any more of that. And I was like, huh.
Yeah, for the rest of the book, her not like other girls tendencies are basically entirely internal thoughts about how she does want to be able to grow up and do things like drive a car, maybe. Mm. And other things that Grand Mary tells her are not ladylike. But all of that is just kind of stated in conversation or in the narration internal to Samantha's mind. They don't factor into anything that happens. There aren't like times when Samantha does something like drive a car. That would have been rad, though. I would love, like, Samantha and Nelly steal a car would have been
awesome.
That's what makes it awesome. Her only being 9 doesn't have any bearing on anything anyway. There probably weren't driver's licenses at the time.
True.
You know?
I've talked a fair bit. What do you think? Should I apologize to you?
No, this book is, as some might say, one of the books of all time. It is just very pleasant and innocuous.
Sort of.
And wants to convey some basic, I don't mean pleasant like, yay, I loved reading this, just pleasant in that it doesn't rock the boat. It doesn't give you any especially tense or dramatic moments that might give you feelings. It doesn't really like horribly stick its foot in its mouth at any point either. It definitely is a very romanticized view of this time.
Yeah.
But I think that is based on the notion that the target audience is not old enough to really process a lot of the reality. And so the lessons are still very basic.
Yeah.
And digestible for a young reader. It would probably have been going too far for the target audience here if we had gone to a factory and saw somebody like lose a limb, right?
Yeah. But the fact that they described it still wowed me.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I made a note at that point where I was like, suddenly this book goes hard. Because Nelly talks about how you can lose a finger, talks about how you can die, and she specifically mentions a time when she saw another girl get her hair caught in the machine, and like all of her hair got ripped off of her head and she almost died, and I was like, holy crap. I did not expect this book to acknowledge that so specifically.
Yeah. Well, I figured your biggest complaint about this was also my biggest complaint, even though I understand, in that there's no overarching plot because it's 3 short little chapter books smooshed into one book.
Yeah.
What we're mostly talking about here is, I think, the strongest little plot, which was the plot of the second book, which is where Samantha's trying to teach Nelly how to read better because Nelly gets to go to school for the first time ever. Samantha's also trying to gear up for this speech-giving contest, and the theme is progress in America. And there's this very awkward scene where Samantha reads her prospective speech to Nelly, and it's all about how factories are amazing. Factories are going to lead us into the next century, and it's going to be just so wonderful because they're going to give us all this great stuff for cheap. And Nelly's just like, okay, rich girl, no, this is how factories are. And that's how we find out about you know, Nellie's past and what she saw at the factories. And so I'm going to say for you to contrast your statement about how there's never a moment where it's very tense or anything. For me, there was a moment where it was very tense because Samantha then goes to the speech contest, having changed her speech to America could be full of progress, except we're really like letting the poor people down and the factory workers down because factories are really dangerous and you can lose an arm. And she just like regurgitates everything that Nellie had said to her. And I'm sitting there like, holy crap, she's going to lose this contest? The hoity-toity people are going to be shocked and appalled and angry. Her grandmother's going to like ground her and she's going to get in so much trouble because the rich people that she's giving this speech to are not going to be happy that she's talking about like social justice issues in 1904. But then she won the contest and everyone was really like, oh my God, the speech was amazing. And I'm just like, that is not accurate. No. She would have gotten trouble. Absolutely.
Yeah.
If this was real. I feel like, am I wrong? I feel like she would have gotten trouble.
Probably. At the very least, I think she would have gotten a reprimand and her speech wouldn't have won. I guess the thing that I was feeling by then is that I had kind of figured out the way that the book functions. In that there is no time for a problem to really develop at any point. Basically, every beat of the stories is you get a chapter that establishes some very minor question or something that is on Samantha's mind. And in the next chapter, that is resolved. and then it moves on. So there's no real steps. To take the speech thing as an example, we get like the inciting incident where she's told about this in class and she asks around to her family about what would be a good thing to choose. Notably, I don't think any of them said factories. So when she chooses factories, it just kind of comes out of left field, but the next chapter, she gives the speech and gets to go to the... She gives the speech and is one of the two winners of her class that get to go to the thing. And then that's basically it. And then she tells Nellie about the speech, and Nellie's like, that's not really accurate. And then Samantha changes it in the next chapter, and that's basically it. Like all of that, everything is in this very sort of two-chapter per... dilemma structure. Mm-hmm. So there's never any time for those things to develop nuance or for additional twists to be added in. Mm-hmm. You know, one chapter Jesse leaves employment, the next chapter Nellie helps Samantha track down Jesse and they find out it's because she has a baby. The end.
Okay, I'm usually gonna put a pin in that because I have so much to say about the whole Jesse arc, but about the speech contest, you're right, in that I shouldn't have anticipated that there was going to be a problem, but based on all of the, like, previous context, I was, you know, for a paragraph, concerned, primarily because I thought the grandmother was going to be angry, because when Samantha starts teaching Nellie how to read, a bunch of the other neighborhood rich girls start making fun of Samantha. Like, oh, you're hanging out with a servant class. Gross. And she goes to the grandmother and she's just like, why are people like this? Why are people upset that I'm friends with Nellie? And the grandmother's like, you're not friends with Nellie. You're helping her. There's a difference. You wouldn't be allowed to be friends with her. I stopped at that point and I was like, oh my God, this grandmother is a horrible person. There's just this very... We are the rich saviors in this poor child's life. Yeah, so that's why I thought the grandmother would be really upset by that.
Yeah.
And my vague memory of later, there's a lot of like voting rights stuff in later books where the grandmother clashes with the uncle's wife.
Yeah.
And I remembered that was the first time I ever saw the phrase newfangled. because the grandmother does a lot of complaining about all of the newfangled ideas of Constance or whatever her name was.
Cornelia?
Cornelia, thank you, yes.
Yeah, and Grand Mary was not impressed by things like machines when it came to progress.
True.
And she has a couple of those sort of lines that are put in historical fiction basically to have a character say such and such is impossible and would never happen, with the reader knowing full well that it absolutely happens. Like, Grand Mary at one point asserts that there's basically no way cars will catch on. It's like, okay, sure. She does live in a world, the Model T hasn't happened yet, so fine. But also, like, wink at the reader. Be like, we know that Grand Mary is wrong. You and me. It's our secret.
Listeners may note that I've been saying grandmother and Brandon's been saying the other thing. I don't like it. I like that she calls her grandmother Grand Mary. It feels so weird and like...
I kind of like it, honestly.
Like a mothball-y addict to my mouth. I don't want to say it.
This might be an unpopular opinion, but I kind of think Grand Mary is the most interesting character in this book.
Interesting, sure. Likeable, no.
Yeah, not likeable, but I think she has the most layers.
That is true. And if you think about it, the grandmother character was theoretically done raising children, but then her kid died, and now she has to raise her grandchild. And that's got to be an adjustment for her to have to deal with.
Well, and as much as she is entrenched in the beliefs of her time, as pertains to how rich people relate to poor people and how ladies are supposed to be and what they can and cannot do and things like that, there are also times when she stands up for Samantha. Often when Samantha is not in the room, when Grand Mary doesn't know that Samantha's perceiving this, like there was a time when a couple of the other rich ladies show up at the house, and I think they were like, we heard Samantha is hanging out with that servant girl, and you should probably do something about that because something bad might happen or she might learn bad things. And Grand Mary like stands up for Samantha's ability to choose her own friends and hang out with who Samantha wants to. And this is something Samantha overhears. She's not in the room for this conversation, but I thought, huh, okay.
I think she also overhears the conversation where, like, so after she meets Nellie, the servant girl, for the first time, Nellie has to leave again in the first book. And as, like, a going-away present, Samantha gives Nellie her prized doll. And then at the very end of that, of book one, somebody's complaining to the grandmother, like, you know, Samantha has no sense of value and just loses her doll, her expensive doll. And the grandmother says to this person, like, actually, I think she has a pretty good sense of value because she gave it away to a poor girl.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that was an overheard conversation and not something that she said to Samantha.
I think you're right.
So, yeah, you're right. You're right.
I mean, I'm not arguing about it.
Well, you said unpopular opinion, so I figured I would.
Yeah, I figure it might be. I don't know.
I put a pin in your comment about Jesse. So, in the first book, we get introduced to the household seamstress, Jesse, who I found it very interesting. I skipped over, apparently, the physical description. And I noticed that Samantha calls Jesse Jesse, and Jesse calls Samantha Miss Samantha. And I saw that, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. I learned something from Nuance when we read Roll of Thunder. And I went back and reread the physical description, and sure enough, Jesse is black. And I don't know how I missed that. Something I don't think that I would have picked up on or just thought anything weird about. until I read Roll of Thunder and had that conversation with Nuance about how Black people were supposed to, you know, call even, like, you know, white children with honorifics. So it was interesting going back and seeing the relationship between this white child and a household worker and seeing that in action and never, like, commented on just because it is the way it was supposed to be. But then also just the way she treats Jesse, I thought was very invasive. So Jesse announces to them in the parlor that she's quitting. And the grandmother's like, all right, well, you get a bonus and it was nice working with you, or nice having you. And Samantha's just like, no, you can't leave. This is nonsense. And gets Nellie to help her go spy on her in her home to figure out why she left. It's like, that is so entitled and creepy. But as Brandon said, they find out that it's because Jesse had a baby. But then, without asking Jesse if what she wants is to continue working, Samantha then goes back to the grandmother and is like, she can still work here, right, though? Like, well, the baby will be fine. It won't be in anyone's way. And the grandmother's like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. But, like, there was never any conversation with Jesse on the part of Samantha about whether or not Jesse even wanted to stay there. Samantha's just like, no, I need my friend. That, like, I have some sort of feeling of command over her life about for some reason.
There's definitely an element of that, but I think that Samantha... I don't think that's why Samantha is doing it.
No, I think she thinks she's being helpful.
Right, but also, I don't even know if I think she thinks she's being helpful. I think there's a couple times when Samantha comments on just the notion of having a job, or at least we're told in narration what Samantha thinks about it. And she seems to be of the mind that jobs are cool. And people do jobs that they enjoy doing. So I read sort of Samantha's response to this as, oh no, Jesse doesn't get to keep doing the thing that Jesse loves to do. Because if she doesn't love to be our house seamstress, why would she be here in the first place? Because I don't think Samantha understands that the majority of people have jobs because they need to pay for things to stay alive. And they don't necessarily like the job, but they need the money. I don't think Samantha understands that at all.
I don't remember if it's in this chunk or like the preview I read of the next ones or something. But at some point, Samantha says something about when she gets a job and the grandmother's like, no, you're not ever going to need to get a job. Did that happen here, or did I imagine it in, like,
yeah,
the reading? Okay.
That was in this book. And that's why I say I think that Samantha thinks of jobs as an adult activity that adults do for fun.
I think you're right. I feel like you're viewing all of these characters as much kinder than I did, because I think I went into this with the mindset of, like, I need to sort of view the story behind the story here and really, like, nitpick all of these people and make sure that I'm not viewing it through nostalgia goggles. So I was very deliberately being harsh.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The sanitized version of 1904 in this book is, at best, kind of negligent in teaching the hard parts of life here. But I guess I didn't read any of the characters as willfully ignorant or dismissive, because I don't think that they were meant to be written that way. But that's not always for, like, a non-problematic reason, right? Like, as you said, Samantha definitely has this really strong rich white savior element. I don't know that she feels that that's what she's doing, but it is what she's doing, metatextually anyway. And the book does not super engage with harder questions about, like, Jesse's relation to Samantha. It does... Nelly does tell Samantha when they go snoop at Jesse's house that, oh, this is the part of town for people who aren't white. And Samantha was like, what? There's a part of town for... Why is that? But that's about as far as that conversation goes.
I think Nellie's answer was, I don't know, adults just think that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the most that the book directly engages with race,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
And it never engages with, like, the whys or wherefores, or even explicitly engages with the fact that Black folks are categorically poorer than the white folks by a pretty significant margin.
Yeah.
I did spend a chunk of the book trying to figure out if Nelly was also Black, but I don't think she is. I think they're just poor white folks, her family.
No. One of the things missing from this package of books is all of the original illustrations. Yeah, Nelly's supposed to be white. So the book does, you know, barely touches on the class difference between white people and Black people, but mostly deals with just class difference in general and shows, you know, rich white Samantha and very, very poor white Nelly. Yeah, because Nelly does show up in the illustrations.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that this was a American Girl book and that those came with dolls and stuff, and though I did not go looking for these answers, I did wonder, would I have some little elements of context if I was a person who was familiar with this toy line?
So, like, Samantha has her own doll, and I read that, like, later on, eventually, Nelly got a doll, too. It was discontinued after a while, but based purely on my memory of all of these books, because I did... You know, I plowed through these, the World War II ones, the Colonial Girl ones. The other girl that was in the original three girls was Kirsten, and I think she was like a Swedish immigrant. Then there was Addie, who was a Black slave in the South. And those are the five girls that I read. There were more girls later on, but I was already like... grown out of it at that point, because the first five are up until 1993, and then after that it was 1997, and I was way too old to be reading these books at that point. But I remember the Molly books being very also about class stuff, but Molly was dealing with a lot of, like I said before, like rations and stuff in World War II. Kirsten was an immigrant and had a very hard time with that. That was the book I only read once, I think, because I found her, like, the least interesting. But she was, I think, Swedish. I don't know. Like, blonde European immigrant. And a lot of her story was about, like, having to acclimate and learn English and stuff. I don't remember what class Felicity was. She was just a, like, revolutionary era white girl. But I do remember the Addie books very vividly because she was a slave. And I remember them being pretty rough because there were definitely like scenes of abuse at the hands of, like, you know, the people overseeing the fields. And yeah, so I think my impression of, you know, the books that I did read was that Samantha was definitely the like richest one, the most, you know, in an advantageous position.
She's the Tony Stark of the American Girl Avengers.
Gosh, that's kind of possibly true. I really waffled over whether or not I was going to pick these ones or the Molly ones, because I remember the war stuff being really interesting in the Molly ones. But I remembered the factory worker stuff being really interesting in these ones. And so that's why I went with this, even though we barely got to touch on the factory stuff because we only read the first three. But that's why I went with Samantha. You know, I don't think that they were terrible. I'm kind of glad that I read them because I think that it really got me interested in reading more historical stuff. And I do remember, because I'm in New England, we had a big segment in high school about child factory workers, because there were a lot of factories up here that had horrible history with child factory workers. And I remember, like, already having a little bit of a background and knowing some of this stuff when we went into those units at school. One of the books we had to read was called Emmeline. I don't know if you ever heard about that.
That sounds familiar. I don't think I ever read it, though.
But I'm sure the book is fine, but the plot is horrifying. There's this girl who has to go work in the Lowell, Massachusetts mills as a small child. And it's just, like, traumatizing and horrible. It's just, like, we would really like to nail home the concept that child factory worker life was horrible and you can't escape it. It's just so rough. And then we went on a field trip to the Lowell Mills and got to see the mills, and it was just like, this is awful. But that's what going to school in New England is like.
Yeah.
History.
Man. We I can't remember any of the names of things or anything, but in Virginia, I think the stuff that we would get in a similar vein was usually about, like, all the bad stuff that white people did to Native Americans. Mm. Though I don't explicitly remember any of them being that intense.
So we have obviously talked a little bit about how there were a bunch of other American Girl books, but so the American Girl TM Enterprise started in 1986. A woman named Pleasant Rowland started this whole thing, everything. It's so much. Through the use of these, like, rather expensive dolls and their accompanying book series, the goal of the project was to teach, and this is in quotes, teach aspects of American history through a 6-book series from the perspective of a girl living in that time period. Things that I read about Pleasant Rowland said that she just sort of, like, saw this gap in like trying to get girls of this age range interested in history, and so she wanted to fill that gap with expensive books and expensive dolls. Like I said, in 1986, the original line was Molly, Kirsten, and Samantha. They each had a doll with all of the doll accessories and the 6-book line. All of them were written by a number of authors. The two authors of the 3 books that we read were Susan S. Adler and Maxine Rose Schur. The entire line was just massively successful, resulted in even more doll girl series, continuing on to today, including such horrors you may have heard of. The recent historical girl that they put out, I think 2 years ago at this point. And this historical girl is from the historical era of 1999. It's painful.
So what, she has to deal with Y2K? Is that...
I think she has, I saw a picture. I think she has, like, an iMac. like it's amazing. It pains me. In 1998, the American Girl Enterprise was bought by Mattel for $700 million. It's considered a book series that tries to pay a lot of attention to diversity and racial justice and things like that, because they do have, you know, a doll from many, many, many different walks of life. I feel like it took them a really long time to have an Asian doll, though. I feel like that was like a thing they were criticized for. All of these books followed this very rigid theme of all of the books. They were all, like, the first book was always Meet Girl Name, and then the second book was always Girl Name Learns a Lesson, and the next one was about Christmas, and the next one was about the birthday. And then the 5th one was always about, like, the big struggle in the life of this character. So the fifth one in the Samantha series was the going and saving Nellie, stealing a boat and saving her from the factory slash orphanage situation. And then the sixth book is always changes for girl name, which tends to touch on more of the like historical stuff that's happening in the world at that point and how this character is sort of viewing those things and the future going forward. They eventually veered away from that structure when they started putting out girls whose cultures don't have Christmas or don't celebrate birthdays in traditional ways. So they put out Kaya, who was a Native American girl, and that's when they had to stop doing the like that structure, because it'd be a little weird to pigeonhole that culture into, oh yes, Christmas for the Native American girl. Yes, absolutely. No. Recently in the news, you may know about this. As is my habit, I put in, you know, book series problematic into Google. And then a bunch of stuff came up, which I had forgot about, that a big controversy in the past couple of years. And so when I typed in American Girl book series problematic, I got a lot of right-wing people complaining about how the American Girl company has gone woke. And I would like to point out that this is the book series that started out with, you know, this. Like, I feel like it already started off trying to be somewhat progressive in that way, even though they, you know, as we've pointed out, there's a lot of glossing over the harder topics. But what happened was they put out a book called Body Image: How to Love Yourself, Live Life to the Fullest, and Celebrate All Kinds of Bodies. And there is a very brief mention in the book of gender dysphoria and how if you're feeling like uncomfortable in your body, you can talk to your parents and talk to your doctor and maybe get something called a puberty blocker to pause things until you decide what you want to be. And the right-wing people had a conniption.
Yeah, that sounds like a thing they would hate.
It's like, you know, when the Star Trek fans are like, oh my god, you know, Star Trek went woke. Since when? It's like, since the beginning.
Yeah. 1966.
But yeah, there's a lot of really angry middle-aged white women that are just like, my American Girl books were never progressive when I was little. It's like, what books did you read? They were certainly trying.
Yeah, I mean, what it all kind of boils down to is some people are just really, really eager to tell everyone they have crap reading comprehension.
So I was glad to see that there was not a ton that I found in my Google search to say that, like, you know, this is a horrible company that we should not promote on our podcast or anything, because it seems like they, even though they've had some missteps, really have tried to be educational and touch on some of the tougher aspects of things.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, I don't think that, you know, backlash to that book is going to hurt them. They are incredibly successful. You know, there's people that have whole, you know, have devoted their entire personalities to the collection of these dolls. It's just it's a whole enterprise. But I never paid any attention to the dolls. I just cared about the books. So
When I got to the end of my copy, my Kindle copy, it was like, check out the other Samantha books. And you'd already told me that this was like a compilation of part of the series, so I was expecting the volume 2 to be there. But then a lot of the other ones were Samantha Mysteries. Do you know what this is about?
Yes. I've never read any of them. But there are the dolls and the books have gone through several incarnations of being like out of print and coming back and them like re-releasing with different illustrations and trying to sort of like refresh the IP. And so, you know, this whole book that we read with the mashup of the first three is its like fourth or fifth reincarnation of Samantha. But for a long time, the books were just, you know, the six. And then, you know, some of them had some workbooks, I think. And then there was a sort of choose your own adventure Samantha book, which really just rehashed all of the plots of this. But like, it was like, you could be friends with Samantha too. Insert yourself into Samantha's story. But what you're talking about is they started in the mid-2000s releasing the books with all of the, with most of the original characters all getting their own little mystery adventure. So in 2005, Samantha, Molly, and Kit Kittredge, which is the 1930s American girl, have a mystery book. I didn't read them. I don't know how gritty they are, but they feel, they seem kind of, you know, Nancy Drew adjacent. The first Samantha one is called The Curse of Raven's Court, a Samantha mystery. And apparently those all did well enough that they started doing them with a lot of the other girls. And Samantha got the second most number of historical mysteries. Some of them only got one, some of them only got three. Samantha got five. She got, you know, The Stolen Sapphire, The Cry of the Loon, Clue in Castle Tower, and Danger in Paris, which was released in 2015. So they kept going. They did stop with the mysteries around 2018, it looks like. And that's when they started a sort of another redo, repackage of everything with this whole Be Forever repackaging process that they started.
I love when a kid's book spawns a ton of sequels that are mysteries, even when the initial book wasn't a mystery.
Yeah,
it's just funny.
I did a lot of thinking about like what it could even be like, but unfortunately all of the articles have, you know, the names of the Samantha mystery books, but there aren't links. I can't find a ton about them.
I have to assume that Nelly solves the mystery and Samantha's also there.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, someone could, if they were so inclined, do an entire podcast episode on the business practices of the American Girl enterprise, because it's a lot. You know, 1986 to now, you know, the company changing hands several times, just, you know, the 100 or so books that exist, however many girls there are, you know, there's a lot to say about it, but I tried to limit it to just the stuff that was relevant to Samantha.
That's fine. Did either of these authors that wrote the ones we read have any like other super notable credits or anything?
Not that I saw. There was something in the first author, Susan S. Adler, had like a little about the author that was like, I was super excited to like do the research for this time period, but mostly like worked in like other fields. Said that Susan B. Adler works in art and conservation. There's so many authors that work on these series that I just couldn't really find a ton on the people that wrote these books. I have to imagine that it was basically like, you know, corporate on high sort of had like structures for these books,
yeah,
plot beats that had to happen, and sort of just like hired presumably probably cheap authors to research a little bit about this time period and plug in, you know, pretty, what's the word here I'm looking for, vaguely superficial sort of fluffy stories that fit the structure of the 6-book series that had to have, you know, a birthday and a problem and a Christmas and a school story and a, you know.
Yeah, I suspect you're correct about that.
There is an American Girl Wikipedia, and I was very hopeful that the American Girl Wikipedia would give me way more information about the authors, but unfortunately it just has a page that's like, this author wrote these 2 American Girl books, and that's it. And I'm like, well, cool. I can find their LinkedIn, but that doesn't really, like, that feels invasive to me. So, yeah. I would have loved to have more interesting information on that question for you. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It can sometimes be pretty tricky to find that kind of stuff with a big brand like this, you know.
Doing the research for this was just, it was very interesting because a lot of the times I had to get really granular with the Google searches for what I wanted, because the entire first page of results would be about doll collector sites and, you know, in-depth breakdowns on the differences between the 1986 version of a doll and the 1997 version of a doll and how many ribbons the hat had. And I read all of them and it's weird. And, you know, the first version of the Samantha doll had like a dusty rose colored purse. And the difference between the one that came out 20 years later is it's more of like a baby pink sort of purse. And I'm not making this up. I read way too much information about the doll's dresses, which I ultimately didn't decide was relevant for this podcast. But people really love the dolls. And there's the whole like eBay seller drama and, yeah, dolls.
Cool.
So I got a little bogged down in some of the doll stuff at a certain point. And I was just like, okay, no, I got to start writing very specific Google searches. I do have a discussion question.
Okay.
We might need to cut this out if we can't think of anything because it is very specific. But my discussion question for you, throwing you right on the spot here. If you had to give a speech in 1904 on progress, what might you have said?
I mean, maybe airplanes.
Ooh.
Granted, not a lot had happened with them yet. So it would be kind of looking forward to, like, someday air travel might be a thing people can do.
That's a way better answer than what I had in my head. I was like, maybe trains. Trains were big back then, but I think that was a little late for trains to be new and interesting, actually.
If I didn't have enough to work with from planes, I likely would have said something like cars.
Mm. So essentially, between the three of us, we've got planes, trains, and automobiles.
That's correct.
We are old. Have that reference.
Yeah. Yeah. Classic.
Should we move on to peaches?
Sure.
I don't know how to judge this peaches-wise, because this is 3 different books mushed into one. My fond memories of it are clearly of the books that came later that I didn't read this time. I didn't have a difficult time reading it. It was kind of just like a super breeze to fly through. None of it really, like, made me mad or anything. It was fine.
Yeah, I think I'm at 2 peaches for essentially that reason. There's not a lot here. It's one of those books that kind of feels to me like a thing that is for a specific child audience, but doesn't have a lot for people who are older than, I guess, really Samantha in the book is. So older than like 9 or 10. But it doesn't piss me off or anything, and I'm kind of reserving 1 peach. I'm kind of reserving like below 2 peaches for like things that I think are actively bad in some way. And these are just fine. They're just very sanitized and, you know, readable. And I can certainly see how these kinds of books would be good gateways into learning more about history and about life in these different times. And I think that that's a noble goal.
Yeah.
So
I'm just going to go middle of the road. I'm just going to give it a 3 because It was fun to go back and remember. And I really am tempted to go back and read the Molly books. So it did. I had a good time, I think. So yeah, I'll go 3. Sure. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, I think I might have given it like a 2.5, but I feel like my gut is to bump it up a half a point because, you know, my rule is that I dock things points for slurs, but I feel like maybe I should reward things points for making transphobes angry. And so that's what I'm going to do.
That is fair.
It's a 3. Three yeah, beaches here, fair. Samantha. Thank you, American Girl, TM, for making transphobes angry. I appreciate it. Some good ally. An ally worth half a peach motion there.
Cool.
Speaking of peaches, what we're reading next is kind of blows my mind a little bit. It's episode 25. And as I mentioned a few times in past episodes, we're gonna do something special. And this time, we're gonna read a book that we've both read. Because we're gonna go take a bite out of James and the Giant Peach. That I wrote that on the blur, but it actually sounds like we're about to engage in cannibalism instead of Moving on. We're going to evaluate our rating system. We're going to go back and read James and the Giant Peach, see if it really is worth us basing everything else on. We're going to talk about some of the recent Roald Dahl censorship issues, because that's a really exciting current event thing to discuss. And, you know, just sort of talk about how the podcast has been going so far.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've written James and the Giant Peach, so I'm mildly curious if we're going to go back and read this and be like, oh no, we've been basing our entire podcast rating system on this? So that's exciting.
Yeah, I think I probably last read it in like fourth grade.
Oh my gosh.
It's been a long time.
I think I last read it probably after the movie came out, because I was like, oh, okay, I want to see how different it is, because I don't remember very strongly what it changed. Yeah. And I don't remember what age I was when the movie came out. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll look into it. These answers and more 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Bum, bum, bum.
My Dog Ate My Book Report is produced and edited by the hosts, Brandon and Rin, each of whom can be found on Twitch as Picarito and Rin Out of Time, respectively.
But it's not... You fixed it!
I fixed it.
You fixed it!
I fixed it.
Good going. The music used in this podcast was licensed by Epidemic Sound. Our icon image was... The music used in this podcast was licensed by Epidemic Sound. Our icon image was illustrated by Cindy Lau.
Have a question or comment for the team?
You can find us on our website, which links to all of our socials at dogatemybookreport.blueberry.net. That's blueberry without any E's. Or by emailing at dogatemybookreport@gmail.com.
We'd be super excited to know what books you loved growing up.
Thanks for listening. Oh, you know, one thing which I didn't touch on that I had in my note?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was, I wrote it, what was the word? Where'd it go? Dickens. Her friend passed her a note that said, what in the Dickens is LaGorge? And she's all like, oh, I need to crumple this note up and put it really small in my pocket, because if the teacher finds a note with a swear on it, and I'm like,
oh,
Dickens
yeah.
is a swear?
I'd never heard that referred to as a swear.